Now, there's a phrase among story writers, among authors, show, don't tell. And the reason they have this phrase is to remind them as they write their stories that to convey who a character is, you don't always just state a fact. So, for example, I'm reading that great work of fiction with Joshy, Winnie the Pooh by A.A. Milne. And at no point in Winnie the Pooh does it ever say, Winnie the Pooh likes honey. Never says that at any point. But it shows you it quite clearly. In the first story, Winnie the Pooh starts to climb up a tree to try and get some honey out of a beehive and gets stung about 1,000 times. In another story, he's giving a pot of honey to Eeyore as a gift. And by the time he's got to Eeyore's house, he's already eaten all of it. In various ways, you find out that Winnie the Pooh likes honey without it ever having been mentioned. And the reason story writers do that is it actually gives you more of an idea, doesn't it? It's one thing to say someone likes honey. It's another to say they're willing to get stung 1,000 times to get a little bit of honey. It shows you in a more full way something that you might have been able to tell from just the bare fact. And that explains why the Bible, so much of the Bible, is narrative. We might think, oh, wouldn't it be easier if God just gave us a list of facts about God? God is nice. God is kind. God is loving. God is just. Well, the Bible gives us stories to flesh it out so we can see what that is like, what his character is like with flesh on. And what we're talking about today, any of the kids who went upstairs could probably have told you. We're learning today that God is kind. I reckon if I asked anyone coming through the door, is God kind? All of you would have said yes. But that doesn't mean that it's sunk into our heart. It doesn't mean that we've really come to understand the kind of kindness God has. And so with this story, we're going to show, not tell. We're going to see the kind of kindness God has. Now, in this story, David is welcoming Saul's disabled grandson. He treats him with great kindness. But this isn't just to show us what a nice bloke David is. We see that in verse 3. The king asks, is there no one still alive from the house of Saul to whom I can show my kindness? No, God's kindness. What David is doing in this passage is not to show his own greatness, it's to show the kindness of God. So as we look in this passage at what David does, we see the kindness of God, not just towards Mephibosheth, but towards us as well. There are three simple things we're going to see in this story about God's kindness. Firstly, the gift of kindness. Secondly, the recipient of kindness, that's the person who receives. And the reason for kindness as well. So gift, recipient, and reason of kindness. We'll start with the gift of God's kindness. Verse 1, David asked, is there anyone still left of the house of Saul to whom I could show kindness for Jonathan's sake? Now, sometimes when you translate from one language to another, you can't convey all that a word means in a word from another language. And that's the case here. The word that's translated kindness here is the word hesed, which is a great Hebrew word which conveys the idea of covenant love, loyal love. It's used two other times so far in the book of Samuel. And if I tell you what those are, it might give you a flavour for what this word means. On one occasion, Abner is talking to Ishbosheth and he says, I've been loyal to you. And the word loyal there is that same word translated kindness here. He's saying, not just I've been nice to you, but I've stuck with you for all this time. And then similarly, in chapter 7, God says to David, my love will never be taken away from your son. And the word love there, the love that isn't taken away, is the same word that's translated here, kindness. Now, I guess when you and I think of the word kindness, we think of our good deed for the day, don't we? That one tiny little thing you might do as a small act of kindness. Open the door for an old lady or something like that. But this is much bigger. This is long-term, loyal love. And that's what David shows to Mephibosheth. I knew I was going to do that at some point. You can count the number of times I get that wrong through the sermon. He shows this long-term committed kindness. It's similar in the difference between two lovesick teenagers saying, I love you, and an elderly couple where one is suffering with dementia, barely knows who the other person is, but they still love them day after day. These are two very different qualities of love, aren't they? One is just a momentary feeling. Another is this long-term commitment. And that's what David has here. He has this long-term commitment to be kind to Mephibosheth. Well, what does that look like in practice? Verse 7. Don't be afraid, David said to him, for I will surely show you kindness for the sake of your father, Jonathan. I will restore you to you all the land that belonged to your grandfather, Saul, and you will always eat at my table. These are hugely generous gifts. Firstly, David gives Mephibosheth his grandfather's land. Now, his grandfather was Saul, the king before David. And when he became king, presumably he just passed on that land elsewhere because he didn't need land. He owned the whole of the land of Israel. He didn't need a particular land to work. But now that his family has not got the throne anymore, Mephibosheth is left without land. And that basically means he's left without an income. You can't go to the job centre at this point in human history. You have land, you grow your crops, and you make an income that way. Now, that wasn't much help for Mephibosheth, of course. He's a disabled man. We're told at the end of this passage he was lame in both feet. He'd been dropped early in his life as a child, and he'd broken both his feet, and that remained. So he couldn't walk, he couldn't work. Well, David prepares for that. Verse 10, he says to Ziba, you and your sons and your servants are to farm the land for him and bring in the crops so that your master's grandson may be provided for. So he doesn't just give Mephibosheth land. He gives him people to work that land for him. So Mephibosheth has gone, perhaps from a beggar on the side of the road. That would probably be all you could do as a lame man in that culture. Going from being poor, landless, being a landowner with servants and a steady income. It's a long-term kindness of David's. And more than that, he says that Mephibosheth can eat at the king's table. Now, that's a bit of a treat. Many people would be excited if they got invited to the king's garden party, wouldn't they? Or get to have a meal with the king. That's a great blessing. But it's more than that. He's there every day. And we're told what that signified. Verse 11 tells us towards the end there, so Mephibosheth ate at David's table like one of the king's sons. He's being treated like a son of the king. We took the kids to Little Moreton Hall over the holidays. I don't know if any of the rest of you have done that recently. As the kids enter the hall, there's this big spinner, and on it, it's got the various classes of Tudor society. So you've got the lords, you've got the ladies, and then you've got the servants. And you spin the dial, and the kids get given a social class. And as they go through the house, they're told all the things that a rich person can do in this room and a poor person has to do in this room. And so if you go into the great hall, there's this banquet laid on the table, and you're told that if you were the lord of the house, you've got to sit in the big chair and eat first. You're told if you're maybe one of the king's family or the lord's family, you get to eat there too. But for the servants, well, if there's any food left over, they can eat that leftovers. That's all that they get. Well, similarly, at this point, it is a great honour to be at the king's table. It shows that you have high status. It shows you're like one of the king's sons. And we're told that this wasn't just a temporary thing. We're told in verse 13, Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem because he always ate at the king's table. He wasn't just there for high days and holidays. Every single day he was fed and he was treated like a son. It is one thing to give a beggar in a street a sandwich from the sandwich shop so that they've got food for one day. It is another to buy him a home, get him a job, and to have him sit at your table day after day. The gap between those things is the gap between what we think of as kindness and what David demonstrates as kindness. Well, you might think that's a very nice story. What's it got to do with me? Remember what we said. David is showing God's kindness to Mephibosheth. He is showing Mephibosheth and he's showing us the kind of long-term loyal love that God's kindness brings. And ultimately, the greatest king, Jesus, is the one who shows that true kindness. Jesus isn't just nice. He doesn't do occasional nice things for people. No, he has vowed to love us. He has vowed to do us good all our days. He has vowed to show us God's kindness. Spiritually speaking, we are like Mephibosheth. We have nothing to bring to God. But God gives us gift after gift. Just as Mephibosheth had the land that was lost by his ancestor restored to him, so we will have restored to us all that was lost when humanity went into sin. We will have a stability forevermore in a land of perfect blessing. And just as Mephibosheth was welcomed to the king's table as a son, so we are invited to sit at the table of the Lamb for all eternity and to enjoy the great blessings that only he deserves. This is the kind of kindness God shows to us. If you're a Christian, God desires to show you the same kindness. He has already shown you the same kindness that David gave to Mephibosheth and much more beside. He has given you this long-term act of kindness for you to enjoy. And like David, we can show that long-term act of kindness to others. The long-term love of a difficult child or an ailing parent or a church member that we struggle to get along with, being kind again and again and again, not just because we feel nice that day, but because we have vowed to do that. But most importantly in this story, we see in David what Jesus is like, saying to you as a Christian, this is how I love you. I will restore to you what is lost. I will welcome you to my table. I will treat you like my son. This is God's kindness. And for those of you who don't know God today, perhaps you all have entered this morning feeling a bit fearful, feeling a bit like you don't belong. But just as David said to Mephibosheth, don't be afraid. That's what he says to you today. Don't be afraid. I have come to bring you something good. I have come to welcome you to my table. Hear his voice today and accept that gracious offer from the king. So that's the gift of God's kindness. The second thing we see in this passage is the recipient of the kindness, Mephibosheth himself. Who is this Mephibosheth? We mentioned it a few times, but let's go over it again. He's a son of Jonathan, one of David's closest friends. But he's also a grandson of Saul. And that brings a significant problem. David had just come out of a massive civil war with Mephibosheth's uncle, Ishbosheth. Now, many people, in fact, the majority of Israel, supported that other claimant to the throne. And what normally people did in this period of history, and if you know your British history right up until really recently, if you wanted to secure your throne, you tried to kill or imprison every single person who had a rival claim to the throne because you wanted to be secure. Now, anyone would have expected David to do that. They wouldn't have expected David to invite this rival claimant to the throne to come and be in his house, to restore to him land, to restore to him servants. Saul had chased David around Israel for years. Ishbosheth, his uncle, had waged war against him. There's no love lost between Saul's family and David. Yet David shows God's kindness. It's like Rishi Sunak making a donation to the Labour Party, or Man City selling Erling Haaland to United, or an Ulster Unionist voting for Sinn Féin. It's not the way things are done. That's the kind of kindness God shows. And so it's the kind of kindness that David shows as well. The other thing about Mephibosheth is he can do nothing for David. He's not an ally who can go to war for him. He's lame in two feet. can't even farm his own land. It's going to actually cost David to let this man be blessed. And he gains nothing from the relationship. As Mephibosheth himself says in verse 8, "What is your servant that you should notice a dead dog like me?" That's how he sees himself. Is there anything more useless than a dog laying dead in the street? But David chooses to bless and to love this dead dog. Now again, David gives us a good example. Who should we be kind to? Well, we should be kind to those who will give us nothing in return. Jesus was once at a meal, a dinner, and he said this to the person hosting the meal. "When you give a lunch or dinner, do not invite your friends, your brothers or sisters, your relatives, or your rich neighbors. If you do, they may invite you back, and so you will be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed. Although they cannot repay you, you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous." It's a very practical example, isn't it? Invite people to dinner that you wouldn't normally invite. People who won't be able to invite you back. That's Christian kindness. And you could extend that to other examples. Give to people who won't necessarily be able to give to you back. Love people who won't necessarily love you back. Show God's kindness to the least deserving recipients. But again, as good as this is as an example to us, it is much more about showing us what Jesus is like. Mephibosheth was a potential enemy to David. By nature, as Peter's already said, we were God's enemies. Paul says in Romans, while we were God's enemies, we were reconciled to him through the death of his son. While we were enemies of God's, he was reconciling us. We often get this wrong. We often think that God helps those who help themselves, that God's kind to those who give something to him. But that's not how it works. God's kindness always goes ahead of any response of ours. He is kind to us before we do anything worthy of honor. You do not earn God's kindness. In fact, you did everything to not earn it, but Jesus welcomed you nonetheless. And similarly, we are by nature spiritually disabled. The Bible often uses pictures of disability to show what we're like towards God. It says we're lame, we're blind, we're deaf. Even on occasions, we're dead in our sin. It's trying to get across the fact that we can do nothing to God. We can do nothing to earn our salvation. But God gives us his kindness, though we are unable and though we are his enemies. If you're a friend coming to Jesus this morning, coming to him for the first time, you need to start by realizing, in Mephibosheth's words, that you are a dead dog, that you can bring nothing to the table. You can do nothing to earn your salvation. You are spiritually disabled. You are an enemy of God. Now, I know that grates, but the only way to be healed of a sickness is to recognize you're sick in the first place. We've all met people who refuse to go to the doctors when they need it, haven't we? They complain of a pain in the chest. And you say, oh, you should see the doctor about that. And they make all the excuses under the sun not to go and have it checked out. They can't be helped until they admit they have a problem. And that's the same for us this morning. Jesus is a good doctor who is willing to heal anyone who comes to him. But we've got to at first acknowledge that we can't do it ourselves. That we're not good enough for his standard. That we are his enemies. That we are incapable of doing what is right. If you recognize, like Mephibosheth, that you are unworthy as a recipient of his grace, then you can come and receive the great gifts from him. So we've seen the gift of kindness, we've seen the recipient of kindness, and last of all, we see the reasons for the kindness. David is generous. He's generous in doing this towards Mephibosheth. But why? David didn't even know he existed until Ziba introduced him. So why do this? Well, we have two reasons in this passage, one of which we've mentioned already. Verse 3, is there no one still alive from the house of Saul to whom I can show God's kindness? David wants to show a descendant of Saul that I'm going to be kind to you because God is kind. Not because you deserved it, not because your family has treated me well, but because God is kind, I want to show my kindness to you. David is saying that Mephibosheth and all that he gains are just a mere echo of the kindness God shows towards Mephibosheth. So David's love only comes because God's kindness came first. The other reason is given in verse 1. Is there anyone still left of the house of Saul to whom I could show kindness for Jonathan's sake? Now, if you're here last year, you'll remember Jonathan. Jonathan was David's closest friend, but that doesn't really convey how deep their friendship was. Jonathan was Saul's oldest son, so he was set to receive the crown after Saul. And yet God chose David instead. Saul didn't like that. He tried to put David to death. Jonathan was the very opposite. He vowed to protect David. He kept him alive. He showed love to him time and time again. The same kind of covenant love David shows here, Jonathan showed first. And so David feels that he's got to show this towards Mephibosheth, Jonathan's son, as a sign of what Jonathan did for him. Now notice that neither of those two reasons depend on Mephibosheth. They are on rock solid foundations that Mephibosheth cannot shake. If David rewarded Mephibosheth because he was a nice bloke, well, there might be a day when Mephibosheth gets something wrong and then he's kicked out of the king's table. But the reasons Mephibosheth has shown David's kindness is because of those two immovable things. Shown it because of the kindness of Jonathan. Now, Jonathan's dead. He's not going to lose that act of kindness in the future. He has done his job. And so Mephibosheth's receiving of kindness is based upon something that's already done and that isn't going to change. And even greater, it's based on the kindness of God. God is eternally kind. He never gets bored of being kind. He never changes his mind. And that's why we read in verse 13 that Mephibosheth always ate at the king's table. Because his presence at that table was based on two things that weren't going to change. Jonathan's kindness towards David and God's kindness towards all those who trust in him. Now again, what an example we have. How long should we be kind? How long should we love the unlovable? Well, we've got a love based on God's kindness. A love that perseveres always. We don't base our kindness on others, on how much they're kind towards us. Worldly love is a bit of a trade, isn't it? You be nice to me, I'll be nice to you. But the minute that breaks down, I'm getting out of there. Whereas the kind of kindness shown by God's people is a kindness that perseveres, even when that person is not showing the kindness to us. Because it's not based on what they have done or what they are doing. It's based on God's kindness, which we're meant to display to the world. But ultimately, this shows us the stability of God's kindness to us. How long are you going to be welcomed at Jesus' table? Or what's that love based on? It's based on God's kindness. Kindness that is infinite. Kindness that is always. Kindness that will never ever renounce. And add to that the basis of Jesus's kindness. He's the Jonathan in this story. Jesus lived a life of obedience to God, serving God all his days. And so God is blessing us not because we've been righteous, but because Jesus has been righteous, and that isn't ever going to change either. Jesus has completed the act of salvation, so it would be unjust for God to kick anyone out of heaven who has trusted in Jesus. It is as impossible for God to stop loving anyone in this room who trusts in Jesus as it would be for David to kick out Mephibosheth. And that's why those of you who don't know Jesus this morning, I can present to you this offer with full confidence. I don't have to say, are you worthy enough to receive God's grace? Because that is not what this salvation is based on. It is based on God's love and Jesus' obedience. And both those things are never going to change. So if you come to Jesus, you will be saved. It doesn't matter what terrible things you have in your past. It doesn't matter what terrible things you're going to do. If you trust in this Jesus, you will be welcomed as a child of God to the table of the King, and no one can stop you. Let's just wrap up what we've learned today from this story. Firstly, for those of you who don't know the Lord Jesus, God offers you the gift of his kindness. What is that gift? It's a seat at his table. It's to be his son or daughter. That offer still goes to you. An offer of joy for all eternity. That's the gift on offer. What kind of recipients does he want? Does he want the holy, the righteous, the people who served God all their life? No. He wants the disabled. He wants his enemies. He wants to show his love and kindness towards the people who least deserve it. And so if you're here this morning thinking I don't deserve this, you are exactly the person that Jesus wants to welcome to his table. And what's the reason for that kindness? Because there's a little spark of something good in you, that he sees potential. No, the reason is his unshakable love that cannot be removed, and the obedience of his son that is already completed. So if you come this morning to Jesus and say, give me a seat at your table. I know I'm a dead dog. I know I'm spiritually disabled. I know I don't deserve to be saved. Well, then Jesus will say, come on in. And you will be at my table for all eternity. And Christians, in the ups and downs of our life, let's never forget what has been given to us by the Lord Jesus. No matter what your last week was like, no matter how many failings you may have, you are seated at his table right now. Paul tells us in Colossians, we are seated with Christ in God right now. And we will experience the fullness of that when we come to his table forevermore. The great blessing not being the food, but being his, being his child. He gives that to you, not because you're one of the spiritual elite, but he gives it you because he wants to show grace towards his enemies. And that reason is totally secure. It is never going to change based on your obedience. It is secure based on the kindness of God and on the obedience of the Lord Jesus Christ. And so if you trust in him, it will never be taken away.